The Prisoner. Trisha's trip from Magnolia to Lebanon was, in her mind, a nice little break from what had happened earlier in the week. The drive itself was what could be termed as a no-brainer. Most of the distance was covered on divided highway, crossing through a landscape of fields made drab by a lack of sunlight. Within 2 hours of leaving the bosom of Zeke's Cafe, Trisha stood at a guardhouse, explaining her mission to a guard who appeared to listen only because he was being polite. 15 minutes later, she was in a drab room with concrete walls, sitting on a metal chair bolted to the floor. She waited for a guard to escort the prisoner to a table which would separate them. "Just who the hell are you, Miss Patricia Michaels, and what the hell do you want?" James Brown Jr. stood in front of her wearing an ill-fitting prison-issue clothing which barely covered the racy tattoos on his upper arms. "If you're another public defender sent by some goddamn lawyer to harass me, fuck you. Whatever it was I was supposed to have done, I didn't do it." He turned to walk away from the table, but the guard firmly turned him back around and sat him down on the seat across the table from Trisha. His body language told her he was not particularly interested in talking with her. "I'm not a lawyer, Mr. Brown. I'm a journalist. I'm doing an investigative article about your family. I've come up from Fuller County this morning to ask you a few questions." Jimmy folded his arms, giving Trisha a cold, hard stare. The guard moved back into a corner of the room. After about half a minute of stone-cold silence, she continued. "I understand that the only substantial contact you've had with any member of your family since October 1967 has been with two of your brothers, Tim and Evan. According to Tim, you are at least aware that Evan committed suicide." Jimmy continued to stare. "Tim also told me that you had been refused parole on several occasions based on anonymous information from an unnamed source out of Cincinnati. Do you have any idea why someone wants to keep you here in prison, James?" "What if I told you I hired a lawyer just to keep me in here?" He looked serious. Trisha thought he might be joking, but the look on his face told her that he might have been serious. "I'm fed, I'm clothed, I have a roof over my head, and I know people. No one wants me on the outside, and the way I figure it, I'm a hell of a sight better being where I am." "You've got to be kidding." Jim Jr. glared at her. "I've been here all my adult life. I've gotten used to being here." Trisha noted a tone of desperation in his voice. He was trapped. His inflection indicated he was aware that he was trapped in the belly of the beast with no practical way out. Even if he were to be released, he wouldn't last long in a world unwilling to accept him for what he had become. "Lady, like I said before, I don't need no one to harass me like a lawyer, and I sure as hell don't need no goody-two-shoes journalist in here trying to write something to get me sprung. Just who the hell are you, anyway, and what business do you have asking about what happened to my family? There's two sides of it, you know. There's what's happened, and there's what people's been told has happened."
"I'm trying to find out what really happened, Mr. Brown, Trisha said softly. "I've seen some evidence that there might be a cover-up regarding the disappearance of your parents. I've heard things which I may not have heard otherwise by being on the outside. I'm hoping that you might have some insight which could help me." Jimmy stared at Trisha for a short time before uncrossing his arms.
"I know a couple of things, or at least I've heard a couple of things," he mumbled while casting an eye toward the guard.
The guard remained unmoved.
"If I told you what I know, I could get killed, you know."
"I'm aware of the risk you run. I've received some veiled threats myself over this story. I'm at risk, however, whenever I write and publish a truth. Some people are allergic to the truth, especially when the truth has the potential to hurt them. If you'd like, I can ask for us to be alone." She looked at the guard. He smiled at her.
"Whatever you say, Miss Knox." He then left the room. "He has called you Miss Knox. I was told you're Miss Michaels."
"I married and I took my husband's name."
"I see. I've read some of your stories."
"I hope with a favorable view."
"I can trust you," he smiled.
For the first time since entering the room, Jimmy seems to be at ease with his visitor. "When was the last time you saw Timmy?" he asked.
"I saw him just a few days ago. We actually just met him and your sister Sally."
"Was he with her?"
"No, Sally and Timmy haven't had contact with each other."
"I take it that Sally's still at house in Possum Hollow," he stated.
"Yes, she's still there."
"That's good to know. She's a lucky woman. Someday she might understand exactly how lucky she was. Mam and Pap left him so as to give her a chance."
"How do you figure?"
"I figured if they'd stayed, the sheriff would have found some way to get her out of the house and into his buddies working in the red light district in Covington. He had a racket going on, and Sally was ripe enough to work as a hooker."
"You're saying that your parents intentionally left the house to prevent the sheriff from taking your sister away?"
"That's the best I could figure it," Jimmy confirmed. "If we were alone, the county welfare people would show up before the sheriff and would have us in the county home before the sheriff could lay a hand on us. Pap had heard stories about what had happened when the sheriff or one of his men would show up. There were stories of girls being taken from home for being truant or some other trumped-up charge, then never seen again."
"And you think that these girls were sent to Kentucky to force to work as prostitutes?"
"I knew it. I found about it firsthand. I fell in with a bad bunch when I was in juvie. When we turned 18 and got out, we robbed a gas station, then went to Kentucky to lay low for a while. We had money and we heard about the houses, so we went to get some action. This guy called Joker, who ran the house we went to, pairs me up with this girl who kind of looked like someone I knew. She ends up being Janie Wallace. She was like this younger sister of mine when Wallace has fostered me. I stayed with them the longest, so I knew it was her. She was 3 years younger than me, and so she only been about 15 at the time. We didn't have much time to talk, but she told me that someone took her away less than a year earlier, doped her up at some farm somewhere near Possum Hollow, and the next thing she knew, she was working for Joker."
Jimmy paused for a few moments. Tricia noticed he was starting to sweat, despite the relative coolness of the small room.
"She told me there are at least two other Fuller County girls she knew who are working the district, then told me not to breathe a word about what she just told me or she'd get a beating."
"Did she tell you who they were?"
"No, never did find out. We heard the law knew about us, so we left."
"What happened to Janie Wallace, do you know?"
Jimmy shook his head. "No, not to her directly, but I heard that if a girl made it to her 21st birthday, she was considered lucky."
The room became silent while Tricia absorbed what had been said. Could have been her. It could have been Lori Smith. It could have been almost any girl in the county who would have paid with her life for the pleasure of other men.
"You said your parents hightailed her from the house to keep the sheriff from getting to your sister. Do you know if your parents are alive today?"
"Pap hightailed it. Mam went with the sheriff because, as I understand it, Sally was out of the house and the sheriff's man come. Davy said he got killed before leaving the hollow. Davy told me some of what happened just before the people from the county home came to take us. I found out through the prison grapevine years later that when Mam was killed, the sheriff went and buried her up someplace he'd known of belonging to someone who owned a bar up in Prentice. Pap is said to have gone to live with some kin in Kentucky just outside of Vanceburg. Davy found out about it and was determined to go to Vanceburg to see Pap around Thanksgiving so the family could be together, away from Sheriff Ross. The sheriff found out about it, took the car, killed Davy, and told everyone that Davy had been in an accident outside of Portsmouth. Pap stayed put, never coming across the river again. He got mixed up with some gal with a kid from somewhere around Magnolia. She had come down with some preacher named Murphy, I think, for a camp. Pap and that woman had a girl they named Lori. I understand she lives over by Rocky Fork."
Trisha's jaw dropped.
"Would her name be Lori Smith?" she asked.
"I think that was about it. Name sounds right anyway. She and her husband own a bait store on the road down the lake from Hillsboro."
Trisha's heart was pounding. There was a connection between the Brown family and Hannah Smith's missing sister, Lori. She tried to remain calm while continuing the interview.
"I had a talk with your sister Frances the other day," she continued.
Francis told me a little bit about the houses of prostitution across the river from Cincinnati.
Yeah, they're pretty bad, Jimmy confirmed.
And she get trapped by them too?
Fortunately, no. She's a successful businesswoman.
I guess a she, Timmy, and Rose are untouched by the whole thing. Jimmy flashed a half smile to Tricia.
You mentioned someone named Joker, Tricia continued. Do you have any idea who he is?
His real name's Tommy something or other. He's supposedly still alive down at a place in Kentucky. Angel of Mercy, I think the place is called.
You don't know his last name? She asked.
White, Jimmy said after thinking it over for a few minutes. His name is Tommy White. They call him Joker because he never seemed to be serious to anyone.
Tricia heard the door to the outside of the visiting area open. The guard filled her in.
Warden said you need to end your visit now, he told her when he got to their table.
Why would that be, officer? Tricia protested.
They wouldn't tell me. All I heard is you need to leave now, Miss Michaels.
Would it be possible to see the warden before I leave?
Guard shrugged while he started to escort Jim Brown Jr. out of the room.
Let's see what I can do, he mumbled on his way out.
Another guard appeared to escort Tricia out of the visitor's room. In a matter of minutes, she was in the gatehouse. A man dressed in a suit was waiting for her.
Tricia Knox Michaels, he asked.
I just use Tricia Michaels these days, she replied.
I'm the warden, Jason Conrad, he introduced himself. I'm sorry that I had to cut your conversation with Mr. Brown short, but there were concerns raised by a caller who said he was Mr. Brown's lawyer. He didn't think it would be in his client's best interest to talk with you and was threatening to get a restraining order. I took it on myself to separate you two. Give me a call around the first of the year and I'll see what I can do about letting you talk with Jimmy some more. Right now I can't permit it.
She left the prison, tarrying just long enough in town to have a quick lunch before seeing if she could find the bait store outside of Hillsboro where she might be able to talk with Lori. She also became concerned that her movements were still being watched. When she left town, she took a roundabout route, stopping frequently and backtracking to throw off anyone who might be following her.
Lori. Tricia put some distance between her and the prison before calling Glenn to give him a status report.
How'd it go, he asked. I got kicked out of the prison for one thing. For another, Jim Jr. seems to think that Jim Sr. is still alive and kicking in Kentucky. What's more, he knows about Lori. He told me that Jim Brown is her father. According to him, her mother, Hannah's mother, met him while she was at a camp meeting with Harlan Murphy.
That's interesting, Glenn commented. Does anyone know, or does Jim Jr. know where she is?
He gave me a rough idea where I might find her. I'm going to call her. I'm going to go see if I can talk to her before I try to go and try to see Quentin Russell. I'll get pictures if I can.
Tricia finally arrived in the Rocky Fork region from Lebanon at about 3 that afternoon. She might have enjoyed the drive a little more if the weather had been warmer and a little drier, giving her a chance to put the top down on the Mustang.
Yes, it was wishful thinking, especially in the gray part of October in Ohio, but she always held out hope. She bumped the temperature on the heater up a notch to keep her chill to a minimum.
3 miles from the entrance of the state park, she saw what she was looking for. A small store with a large red sign on the building announced that it was Sheldon's Bait and Tackle, sandwiches and drinks. She smirked at the arrangement on the sign. On the left, the word Sheldon's, the words bait and sandwiches appeared without any punctuation, so apparently announcing that bait sandwiches were available.
The sign painter could have done a better job, she chortled.
Tricia parked the Mustang near the front door. There's only one other car in the parking lot over to the side of the building. It appeared to be decorated in rust, with at least one missing hubcap and evidence that the hood latch wasn't working quite right. The car probably belonged to the person inside behind the counter. Tricia got out of her car and walked in the front door of the store. It was empty. There was a paucity of items on the shelves, mainly old fishing lures, which, for some reason or another, never seemed to sell. A small refrigerated display case near the front counter had styrofoam cups with crude printing on them announcing what type of bait awaited the customer.
A meat case adjacent to the display case contained two or three large hunks of some sort of deli meat ready to be sliced by the slicer seam on the counter on top of the counter. Somehow the bait seemed more appetizing.
"Sorry for the lack of selection. It is the off-season, you know."
The woman's voice came from behind the counter. She seemed to blend into the scene around her.
"Only reason I'm still open is waiting for the kids to come off the bus."
"You ain't from here, are you?" The woman came up to the counter. To Tricia, she looked a lot like Sally might have looked if Sally had not fallen victim to her nicotine habit. She had long black hair, pulled back and braided. It wound down around her like a snake, reaching the small of her back. There were bags beginning to form under her eyes, as well as the beginnings of crow's feet. Her clothing was simple, a plain blouse over top of a long, dark skirt which nearly reached the floor. Tricia smiled at the woman, asking if there were any cold Cokes to be had.
"You're from Texas asking for a Coke. We got Pepsi, double cola, RC, and maybe some ski, but we ain't got no Coke."
"Might have a can or two of Dr. Pepper in the back of the case," she said, indicating a refrigerated case near the front door. "Just help yourself, honey." Tricia grabbed the one lone Diet Pepsi, then set it on the counter along with a pair of dollar bills. The woman made change.
"Do I know you?"
Tricia asked, putting the coins in her pocket.
"How could you know me if you're from Texas?" the woman asked.
"I'm not from Texas. My husband lived there for a while. I live outside of Prentice." Tricia felt the woman's eyes inspecting her in a cold, hard way.
"You probably don't know me then," the woman said in a flat monotone. "Thank you kindly for coming in today, and do come back sometime, okay?"
Tricia was almost certain that she was seeing Lori Smith. She decided to take a gamble.
"Certainly, Lori."
The expression on the woman's face indicated that Tricia had hit the nail on the head. "It is Lori, isn't it? Lori Smith from Magnolia?"
"Never heard of her," Lori was quick and direct. "The name's Sheldon, just like it says on the front outside."
Tricia quickly took a copy of Glenn's picture of the sisters out of her tote and placed it on the counter facing the woman. "You look a lot like your older sister would have looked if she hadn't have been murdered by her husband." Lori shoved the picture right back into Tricia's chest. "We're closed. Get your picture and get out," she said with more than a hint of wrath. "I have a gun. I know how to use it. Just get the hell out. I'm closed." The women stared at each other, neither one of them making a move.
"Just what the fuck do you want anyway?" Lori asked, finally breaking the silence.
"There are people who care for you, who want to know where you are. I'm one of them. I want to know what happened to you after your sister and your mother died. I also want to know about your father. Ain't nobody's business but my own. How did you find me anyhow?"
"I'm a writer, a reporter, a journalist. I look for stories and sell them for a living, that is, if the subject of my stories agree. I talked with a man who says he's your half-brother earlier today."
Tricia felt Lori sizing her up again.
"Where'd you get that picture?"
"It's a copy of a picture taken by my husband." Lori scowled.
"Michaels," she finally muttered. "He's the reason my sister's gone. Are you saying you're married to that son of a bitch? What's he told you about me? About Hannah?"
"He loved her, you know. Her murder weighed him down for nearly 25 years. He's told me everything about her. Everything."
"Including about the baby?"
"Yes, including the child he and your sister were going to have together. If her husband hadn't gone off the deep end, Glenn would have divorced his wife and taken Hannah out of Magnolia to live with him up in Cleveland. And I would probably still be in Portsmouth married to... well, that's not important. I'm married to Glenn."
"Well, good for you, and you found me. Big whoop. Now do me a favor and get lost. Forget you ever saw me. I don't need no one digging in my past."
The sound of the shop door opening behind her gave Tricia the opportunity to shrink back into a corner of the store while Lori attended to her customer. He was a large man, yet soft-spoken. He and Lori had what Tricia recognized as an ongoing conversation regarding local affairs. He occasionally looked in Tricia's direction as if he was keeping an eye on her. In less than 3 minutes, he was gone, carrying a loaf of bread and a gallon of milk.
Tricia came back to the counter to ask if Lori would dispose of the now empty soda can. Mark seems to think you're okay. Said he's read some of your stories and liked them. He's a little shy, though. He wanted to meet you.
We could go and try to catch up with him, Tricia offered.
It's all right. You can stay here and talk with me at least until the kids get back. I got to tell someone about what happened after my mama died. I may as well tell you.
Lori pulled a stool from behind her. She handed it over the counter to Tricia before grabbing another stool to sit on herself.
When I first saw Glenn Michaels, I was 5. He was the prettiest man I ever did see in my life. He looked even better when he came to my sister's funeral. I'd just turned 15, and I could see why Hannah would have wanted to fuck him silly. I had half a notion to run away with him myself, but with all that noise Mama was making about how he killed Hannah, and that was all his fault, I couldn't. Sheriff finally put Mama in jail to shut her up. After she ran the car into the bridge, I decided to run and find my daddy. I was told he lived somewhere in Lewis County, Kentucky. It took me 2 days of walking and hitchhiking before I came to his place.
I take it your mother and father didn't live together.
Daddy lived in Kentucky most of the time I known him. He's still alive, most likely still at his place out in the country.
Your mother lived in Magnolia, right?
She did. Daddy got her pregnant with me when she went to a camp meeting. At least that's what she told me about it when I was 10. I later found out that my being was part of a business arrangement.
What kind of business arrangement would that have been? Tricia asked.
I had no idea there was an arrangement until after I'd been at Daddy's place for a few days. It was a week after Hannah's funeral. This older man called Tom or Tommy came up to the house to visit Daddy. I heard him talking real low about something. I couldn't quite tell what, but his voice inside me told me to get out of there quick. I snuck out the back door, and about the time I was across field and back of the house, Daddy was screaming for me. I run, and I never looked back. I think that son of a bitch was trying to do something to me to sell to the other man, like Hannah was sold to the man what killed her. Ended up making my way back to Ohio, camping out and living off the land. Arnie Sheldon's kin finally found me and took me in, and I've been with him ever since.
Do you have kids of your own? Tricia asked.
I got the two, Anna and Andy. Anna's 10, Andy's 12. He takes after my daddy.
Tricia glanced at the clock behind the counter. It's nearly 4:00.
Is there any chance I can meet your children? I mean, when they get off the bus.
Nearly time for them anyway. Just don't say anything about where you come from or what we've been talking about.
Tricia agreed. While they were waiting, they exchanged some basic contact information. The longer they talked, the more comfortable Lori seemed to be with Tricia's presence. It was nearly 4:20 when the hiss of air brakes alerted the women to the arrival of the school bus. Andrew was first through the door, followed quickly by his sister. They were having some sort of animated argument about having to do with one of Andrew's classmates. It seemed that some boy had said something about liking Anna. The exchange lasted half a minute before they noticed there was someone else in the store other than their mother. Tricia thought that Anna looked a lot like her mother and would have looked like when she was 10. Andrew was a typical preteen with reddish hair and freckles. He certainly did look a lot like a few photos he'd seen of the elder Jim Brown. Lori eventually scooted her children to the house behind the store. Tricia waited for a few minutes.
You said something about the man who killed your sister. You said that he bought her?
Lori sat back down on the stool behind the counter.
Yeah, he did, she said slowly. I recall Mama coming into a whole bunch of money just before Hannah got married to that preacher Murphy. I wondered how come was it that she could get married to someone old enough to be our daddy. It was all about the money, you see. Hannah was going to be worth something to someone. Mama knew that. When Mama got to found out that Hannah was seeing Glenn Michaels, she figured there was no way Glenn could pay what she thought Hannah was worth. Preacher made Mama an offer, and next thing she knew, or Hannah knew, she was married, barefoot, and pregnant.
You thought you were being sold too, didn't you? Tricia asked.
Best I could figure it, that's how it was going to be. I figured if I was getting married, I'd much rather do the choosing myself. Turned out I did okay. Arnie ain't much to look at sometimes, but I'm sure as hell love him as much as he loves me.
With every bit of my heart.